From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The governor has given checks to every member of the House this week. I ask you, have you cashed a check? Have you cashed a check to vote against the middle class?
If the governor contributes, that's no different than a lot of people that have contributed.
Anyone seen the governor's language? I haven't seen the governor's language. In fact, in the hour and a half we've been debating this, you could have filed the governor's language. The Rules Committee would have met. Leader Curry's a nice lady. She would have called the Rules Committee together. And I'm quite sure that when this amendment fails, Mr. Hoffman would hold the bill so we could have a hearing on the governor's language. But no one chose to file the governor's language because there is no governor's language.
So ladies and gentlemen, have your day, and then let's be responsible. Let's lead finally, let's do something different. Because the same thing over and over and expecting a different outcome, the end of the game shouldn't be. That's Illinois. That's the definition of insanity, stupidity. Let's do something different. I dare you.
Well, I'm not sure if anybody was doing anything different or not at the Illinois State House this week. It seemed to be politics as Illinois House Democrats voted down a right-to-work measure. The debate was contentious. You heard a little bit of it there from the House floor just in that discussion at the beginning of the show. Also, along with the right-to-work, no clear roadmap on pension reform. A week after the pension decision and a lot of talk at the State House about pensions. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel, Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Brian Mackey with Illinois Issues in WUIS and at our State House Bureau, Amanda Venicky, WUIS and IPR State House Bureau Chief. So, Amanda, let's rewind just a little bit, and we heard all those people yakking at the beginning, all of them Illinois lawmakers, and what were they arguing about there?
So they're arguing about right to work, and this is something that the governor, after having really steered away from talking about any union agenda during the general election campaign, came out with during an appearance in Decatur in late January. He said he doesn't want to make Illinois a right to work state, but he wants these local, quote unquote, empowerment zones, which he believes, especially on border communities and what have you, will make those communities in the state of Illinois overall more competitive. In a quick moment to explain right to work, because I think it's a term that's easily tossed around, but a quick bit of explanation can be handy. This, what Rauner calls it, forced unionization, but it's not like you have to join a union. There's nothing that is forced in that regard. What you are forced to do is, if you work in one of these union shops, is pay some sort of due, a fee to the union for the work that it does on all employees' behalf, whether you're a member of the union or not, to, say, secure you health care benefits or a salary hike, that sort of thing. So that's what this is all about.
And we brought this up in the Illinois House. It wasn't the governor's actual proposal, as if the governor
gets
to write.
None.
They
right.
keep always saying with the governor's language, the governor can't write legislation, actually. But it was a version reminiscent, and it was House Speaker Michael Madigan's attempt to show that Democrats aren't supporting some of the governor's more high-profile, more strong anti-democratic constituent-type legislation.
So yeah, you always want to be looking at motives, and that's where Republicans' ears justifiably perked up when it's the House Speaker, who notably voted against this, of course, was the one that was putting forward the legislation. In a statement, Madigan says that he believes this is an issue that's so important to middle-class families, it deserved a full hearing, and he pointed out it's been over 100 days since that time in January in Decatur when Rauner first unveiled this concept. And it's lo and behold, time to have this sort of debate. It would be huge. And we have, what, about 15 or so days left in the legislative session. So get a move on. But Republicans questioning that, they're saying, hey, what is the speaker up to? Is it for Madigan to show Democrats strength and to knock Rauner down a few pegs? Is it to perhaps appease some of the members of the House that are really frustrated with the Republican governor, all of his cuts, the entire turnaround agenda, and he's giving them an outlet for it? Is this a way for Madigan to show unions, hey, we're Democrats, we're not leaving you behind, we're sticking by you? Is it also, could be all of these things, a way for Madigan to try and splinter the House Republican caucus, who thus far has stood by their new Republican, of course, well-funded Republican governor, and to try and splinter that, break some of them off, get some fracturing in there, while at the same time giving an opportunity by putting particularly moderate Republicans who are in districts that have Republicans that are in districts that have a lot of union membership, and therefore this would be a very difficult vote for, put them in a tough spot so he can run some campaign brochures against them in next year. So it's probably a mix, perhaps, of all of that, really.
You know, Amanda, I was thinking about this, and the governor's really been in a pretty good position with this because he's been going around the state giving speech after speech after speech. He's been going to businesses. He's been going to village boards, universities. He's asked local governments, counties, and cities to pass resolutions supporting what he's calling his turnaround agenda, a big component of which are these local right-to-work zones, what the governor calls empowerment zones, and what unions call right to work for less money zones. But, you know, the governor is out there, and this kind of reminded me of the Floyd Mayweather-Manny Pacquiao boxing match we had a few weeks ago. There had been years of buildup, years of questions. Who could win this fight? Who's truly the best boxer? Rauner is out there basically saying, you know, I'm going to fight. I can win this fight. We need to win this fight for Illinois. But he never actually agreed to step in the ring. So what we had Speaker Madigan do is kind of set up a mannequin and say, all right, let's see what would happen. And he just kept delivering left cross after left cross with each of these agenda items. And he set up a few more for future weeks, too, to try and just show, you know, the governor can say that he wants this and this is what he thinks is best for Illinois. But the votes are simply not there yet in the Illinois House, at least.
And I would guess the votes are never going to be there for right to work. So maybe the prudent thing for the governor would be to say, okay, this is something that's dear to my heart. I love this more than anything except my wife and children, but we're not going to get it. So I will yield on this, and now you give me these other things that I want. You know, work out that kind of a negotiation. That would be one thing. And it also occurs to me that were the governor perhaps more seasoned in politics and more familiar with how the legislative process works, instead of demanding this blind allegiance from every Republican, he would have said to the ones who are in districts where there's a stronger labor presence and who've had strong backing, particularly from the teachers' unions in the past, hey, this is a sham. We all know it's a sham. Go ahead and vote no. I'm not going to hold it against you. Don't expose yourself. And I can't help but thinking that we're the shoe on the other foot, and we're Mike Madigan in the position where there is going to be a bill called that he didn't like, he would tell his targets, you know, vote for it or vote against it, whatever is best for you in your district. As a matter of fact, one of the Republicans, the only Republican who voted no on the bill, was Representative Raymond Poe from Springfield, and he was asked why, and he says, I vote my district. And I think, as I say, maybe a more seasoned political leader would realize this is all, as Rauner called it, political theater, so I'm going to tell people who might be in a dicey position, if they don't vote no, go ahead and vote no, because it's meaningless.
You know, and Amanda, I don't know if you covered this already. I'm sorry, I forgot. But the actual vote was something like zero yes, 72 no, and then a bunch of present. But there were also Republicans.
Half a dozen took a walk.
Right, who take a walk. That means they didn't push their button either way so that they can't be pinned down. And that's, you know, probably an indication that maybe they don't want to alienate the governor, but they certainly also don't want to alienate unions.
So they either take a walk or take that courageous present vote that just confuses the general public of what it is.
Republicans let me say, are voting present, not just on this, they voted present. Madigan has kind of ruled out this strategy. As was previously noted, he's scheduled similar votes on aspects of the turnaround agenda for next week on workers' compensation and putting limits on damages in lawsuits. So those are scheduled for next week. As we are taping, there is a vote going on with freezing property taxes. And there has also been a series of votes on the budget, and basically they had already voted with, again, no votes in support a budget plan with all of Rauner's cuts to human services, and are kind of doing piecemeal votes just on amendments, so it's not all the way through the House or anything yet, but restoring some of those cuts on a bunch of various, there's about a dozen of these. So this is happening time and time again. Republicans are consistently voting present because they say this is BS. It's, for them, procedure, and procedure makes it sound really bland, but I think you have years of pent-up frustration where Republicans were in the super minority status, weren't able to get their way. Having a Republican governor does give them an extra seat at the table, but Democrats still have their super majorities, and Madigan's using it. Well, they're voting present in protest, and they're saying none of these were actual real votes. I mean, so I'm not defending either sort of vote, but merely pointing out where Republicans say they're coming from. Is it that they are being gutless for voting present? Or is it they're being smart to not fall into a trap that they say is being foisted on them by Democratic leadership?
I would say what they ought to do is play to the trap, because this stuff is meaningless. So vote whatever is the most politically expedient for the district instead of trying to kowtow to the governor. And as I say, when the governor has more seasoning and he's more familiar with the legislative process, he'll realize that on some things you don't necessarily need 100% solidarity. You have to look on down the road and say, what's advantageous for this particular legislator in his home district? Do I want to string him out on some roll call to say, oh, I have everybody, you know, I have lockstep allegiance from the troops? Or do I want to give people dispensation so they can do what's expedient for them back in their home district?
I do have to say there was an irony, I thought, in the press release that House Speaker Mike Madigan put out when he talked about these votes on changing lawsuit procedures and workers' compensation next week. The first line was, working to bring closed-door discussions on important issues out into the open. And I think I could iron a shirt with the amount of irony in that statement of House Speaker Michael Madigan working to bring closed-door discussions out into the open.
And you're saying
because Madigan is traditionally
he is very tight-lipped and well-known as secretive. That said, I mean, I think that there is a bigger point here, which is that clearly Governor Rauner has said in private and in public, he said it in his State of the State address, don't take these agenda items as individual bullet points. They should be taken as a whole package. And I think that he views his entire agenda as well as the budget, which is something, you know, the Democrats are not enthusiastic about very much in his agenda, but they are enthusiastic about solving the budget problem that, you know, in a way that doesn't require massive, massive cuts. And we're currently billions of dollars behind for what we, you know, what people would like to spend for next year. And I think that the governor has viewed, you know, or has at least tried in these closed door negotiations to say, let's do this as one package. Doesn't seem that the Democrats want to go along with that, though.
Amanda, I got a question for you real fast, Amanda Vinicky, going to the hallways. Are these Republicans really bent on this? Are they nervous, the rank-and-file Republican member nervous about the Madigan's calling for these votes? By and large, this is just political posturing that we're seeing at this point in a legislative session.
It's political posturing, but of course, unions have a lot of money, and more than that, significantly, they have a lot of members who can go knocking on doors come election time. You have a pair of House Republicans, for example, who are cops. You know, they're probably not going to go with right to work. So I think there's, in a way, that sort of fear. There's a lot of stepping around. All legislators really trying to feel one another out in the new Rauner dynamic. And there's some honest frustration from Republicans who say, hey, you've got to deal with us now. And we believe that the 12 years of one party rule got us into this mess. And instead of trying to work together, closed doors, in front of whatever, instead of trying to work together, this is more game playing. We're wasting days, I mean, days upon days with these votes and these debates. If they aren't real, if, as Republicans would lead you to believe, if they're not real, why are we wasting this time? That said, time is running out, and Democrats are saying, hey, look at that clock. We're supposed to have this all done by May 31st, and Rauner, we've got no proposals from Rauner. No, the governor can't introduce legislation himself, but that's what the Republican leaders are there for.
Well, but that's kind of facetious to say that, Amanda. Yeah, governors can't introduce legislation.
Oh, no, this, right. You know, Charlie, I'm agreeing.
How many times have you seen the leadership of the party introduce bills for the governor, for the administration? I mean, I suppose, I'm not down there every day, but I suppose they still do it because they did it all the time I was there. And I remember one particular time when the Senate president, who was a Republican, introduced a bill at the governor's behalf that the Senate Republican president did not like, and he had added to the legislation that it was introduced per request. To point out that he was doing it for the governor,
Republicans
and he did not
could
believe
do it,
it,
and that is the point. They haven't.
It is worth adding here, Amanda, that the governor made a point, including to you, that hey, the legislation is ready to go. I'm just waiting for word for when we can file it. And I mean, obviously, that seems to not
because
be
negotiations
the case now.
Are ongoing,
right?
I think that he's waiting for negotiations, trying to do it in these working groups, and there has been a lot of attention given to that by people saying they're secret. And I'm all for transparency, and I agree, get it out there, as you noted. Though, Brian, there's an irony to Madigan kind of chastising beyond just that Madigan is typically somebody who is very private and doesn't share what he is working on or what he's up to. There have long been, for years now, actually, these closed door budget working groups. They weren't necessarily called working groups, but organized by the speaker himself, where witnesses were brought in and reporters and members of the public were not allowed, invite only, including this very session. So that's outside of the working groups. That there's another set of secret General Assembly groups trying to hammer this all out.
And certainly we saw that with the pension legislation that passed a few years ago, that a lot of those were closed-door negotiations. And I think, Charlie, you can even talk, about when they used to use when the House and Senate passed different versions of a legislation they need
the
to reconcile. Conference committees,
yeah.
Exactly. And that used to be even more closed door for these big ticket items. That's not that unusual.
Yeah, but there was also a period when conference committees were open, because I can remember going and covering some of those.
Oh, and with pensions, there were open conference committees as well. But there were plenty at the same time closed door talks.
You're listening to State Week. Just ahead, we're going to talk about some campaign contributions that may have come in from high sources this week to some of the members of the Illinois House. That's just ahead on State Week.
Support for State Week in Review comes from Illinois Issues Magazine, deciphering Springfield legislation and the state of the state. Information at illinoisissues.uis.edu.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Amanda Venicky. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. One other note, and this was talked about in some of the debate audio we had at the beginning of the show, was that Governor Rauner this week, when he was seeking solidarity, also coincided with some campaign contributions that he gave to members of the Illinois House. But I should also note, this was the very same week where House Speaker Michael Madigan held his big fundraiser, and lobbyists of all stripes were there kissing the ring financially as well. But Amanda, you want to bring us up to date on this?
So, yeah, we've had a couple of news organizations reporting that I believe it's about $400,000 was spread out over legislators in general. As of this taping, if you look at State Board of Elections filings, we don't see that amount yet. Basically, actually, the Senate Republican leader getting about $10,000, and then three members of the Illinois House, all Republicans, getting between $8,000 each, or in one case, another $10,000. So a lot of money coming from Citizens for Rauner, and that was brought up. Yes, Phil, as we heard in the open, Democrats saying, oh, you're sticking with the governor Republicans? I wonder why. Look at those contributions that you're getting. To play kind of the devil's advocate here, I think that nobody would be surprised. You look at the timing, maybe it's a reminder from Rauner, and one that is a governor who's talked a lot about special interests and the conflict of interest may need to take a very close look in the mirror. But of course, nobody is surprised that Rauner, or should be surprised that Rauner is wealthy, that he has and will put money into his own race and give to legislators. He said that from day one of becoming governor and even before that. So perhaps not that much should be made about this. You see a lot of it in the General Assembly, both coming from him and, as you noted, Bill, Madigan spending a lot of money on his membership as well. And that's long been why people say he has been able to run such a tight ship with Democrats in the Illinois House, because they depend on him for their own campaigns.
Last week on the show, of course, we were talking all about the pension law being ruled unconstitutional by the Illinois Supreme Court. That obviously spilled over this week into a lot of talk about, well, what kind of pension measure could we actually get through? And Governor Bruce Rauner even saying on Thursday he's a little unclear now where the pension legislation could be heading.
Well, it occurs to me, having actually read the opinion, that it's pretty clear what the court said. And what the court says is that the plain English in the Illinois Constitution, saying that membership in a retirement system is a contractual relationship, the benefits of which shall not be diminished or impaired, means exactly what it says. And so it strikes me that it's a lot of wasted time and energy trying to figure out ways around what I think is a ruling that is really clear, and as a matter of fact, in essence, it says in the opinion that once you enter into state employment and you're in one of these retirement systems, your benefits cannot be changed or diminished, I should say. They can be increased going forward, but what's there when you enter, and in any enhancements, those are what are going to be there when you retire, and those cannot be decreased. I think that was pretty clear. And so, as I say, it strikes me it would probably be more prudent to figure out ways to deal with the unfunded liability instead of keeping trying to figure out ways that we can kind of game the Constitution.
It's just that the ways to deal with the unfunded liability are so politically unpopular, right? The Justice Carmeier mentioned some of them. You could increase revenue, which means a tax hike. You can change the re-amortization schedule, the schedule of payments. But I think that you're going to get philosophical opposition to that, because people will say, I can quote now, kicking the can down the road. I'm sure we will hear that expression used in this debate. One thing I think we are going to hear a little bit more about, as we heard this week, is a potential constitutional amendment. People want to try and weaken the pension protection clause as it is in the Constitution right now to say that, okay, benefits you've earned up to this point are protected, but we can change the game from this day forward. And that's certainly something that's been the governor's message for a long time now. It's not clear to me, though, that you can kind of go in after the fact, because you have,
I don't think you can.
Right. You have federal contract law that can become involved in that case. And then, you know, potentially you could bring in another layer of legal questions and more years of debates. I think what is clear is that I don't know that anybody realistically thinks we're going to get any savings anytime soon, even though the governor had counted $2.2 billion in savings into his budget plan for the next fiscal year.
Is this something, Amanda Venicky, that people that can make things move will actually try to have something accomplished here in the coming month?
I mean, there's such budget pressure because of the pensions that in a way you would think so. But and this is, I think, why people kind of look at government with a lot of disdain, because and yet it's also the realities of things that you have all of these other union issues going on. So there's some thought that that unions will want to keep on pushing all of their anger on Bruce Rauner and don't break that up at all with another pension fight. So push it the can down the road. There's also all of these other debates going on. So it could be very difficult in such a short time. Look at how long it took to get that original pension bill passed that now the court has tossed out. So with all of these divisions, and again, everybody just kind of tiptoeing and or broadly shoving one another, to use Brian's boxing analogy, into the ring at this point, it could be very, very difficult for something to get done in this short a period. You did have the governor sit down this week with the Senate president. It seems as if they've had the tensest relationship out of all of the leaders. And yet they met for an hour. And from what I heard, it was really the governor asking a lot of questions, which I'm guessing Cullerton would appreciate. He's sticking by his quote unquote consideration plan. Rauner talking about new proposals regarding pensions that remain to be seen. And he also was he's never said no to any sort of revenue increase. And to me, he seemed even lighter with that and talking a lot about compromise and about his 10-minute availability with the State House press corps this week. So anything is possible. But right now we've got two jam-packed weeks coming up and a whole lot of questions about what may or may not get done.
I just want to add that we have already begun to see the outcomes of this have real-world consequences. Moody's this week has been downgrading the bond ratings of various agencies in Chicago, the Board of Education, the Park District, and the city itself. And that, could cost hundreds of millions of dollars more. And the Chicago Public Schools are already in a serious budget crunch going into next year, and this just makes that problem that much harder for them to have these higher borrowing costs.
We'll take a few moments and get some notes from the field, and Amanda Venicky will throw it to the State House and start with you.
Of course, outside of these major arguments that we all follow so closely, there's plenty of other interesting legislation going around. I'll bring back, because people were interested in it, and it was one of Governor Pat Quinn's last actions, was to veto a bobcat hunting bill. We don't know where Bruce Rauner stands on that, though he is himself a hunter. That legislation is before the Illinois Senate. So the lift on hunting bobcats may well be lifted.
Brian Mackey.
Yeah, I was at another one of the Governor's Commission on Criminal Justice Reform hearings this week. This is a big bipartisan group. Not many, only one lawmaker who could make it, because it was during a session day and during some of those big debates we were just discussing. But you have prosecutors, academics, judges, defense attorneys all on this group. And they heard about, from a criminal justice expert at Loyola, basically how hard it's going to be to actually reduce the prison population and some of the various things you could do. He had one of those, he called it kind of like a fundraising thermometer, like you see the Red Cross will have or something, and he would show, okay, you change this, you can cut 500 prisoners. You change this, you can get another 300. And there's just going to have to be a lot of changes and a lot of compromise. This is going to be a long, difficult process, but one we'll be keeping an eye on.
And Charlie Wheeler.
Well, the Illinois Department of Transportation this week released its five-year transportation plan, which it's required to do by law every year, and it warns that unless there's new revenue in the system to maintain and upgrade the existing road system, the mileage of acceptable highways in Illinois could drop from 83%, where it is today, to 62% by 2021, which would be five fiscal years from now.
And also this week, a report from the State Auditor's Office found more than $321,000 paid for services to dead people through a program in the Illinois Department of Aging, says the funds went for senior citizen services in the department community care program. That's our time for this edition of State Week. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org or search it out on iTunes, State Week in Review. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.